Om Sang Saraswati Namaha on page 163, chapter 3. Meditation. The radiant body of the Mother of the Universe has the magnificence of 1,000 rising suns. She is draped in a sari of red silk. Around her neck is a garland of red skulls. Her two breasts have been colored with red sandal paste. In her four lotus-like hands, she holds a rosary and shows the mudras of knowledge, fearlessness, and granting of boons. Her three eyes are shining, and her bud-like mouth is extremely beautiful. Upon her head sits a crown of jewels in which the moon is situated, and she is resting upon a lotus seat. With unlimited devotion, I bow down to this goddess. Om, the Rishi said, when the great thoughts thus saw their forces being destroyed, that heroic general, devoid of clear understanding, in great anger proceeded to do battle with the Mother of the Universe. That thought rained upon the goddess a cloud of the arrows of various doubts as plentiful as the waters that fall from a cloud upon Mount Meru. He doubted everything. He had no clear understanding. Thomas. Then the goddess fired such a multitude of arrows that cut his arrows into pieces and also killed his horses and his charioteer. With this, she also cut his bow and his exceedingly high banner, raising the banner of doubt very high. I just don't understand. Convince me. After cutting his bow, she pierced his body with her arrows. Losing his bow, chariot, horses, and charioteer, that thought took up his sword and shield and ran after the goddess. With the sharp edge of his sword, he struck the lion on the head, and with great speed, he gave a blow to the goddess on her left arm. When that sword touched her body, it broke into pieces. And that angry thought of many considerations took a pike in his hands, not giving up. And that great thought threw that glaring pike at the excellent one beyond time, just as the sun fills the heavens with dazzling light. When the goddess saw that pike coming at her, she too let loose her pike, which split his weapon into numerous pieces, and, devoid of clear understanding, gave up his life. I guess he understood. After the death of that valiant general in the army of the great ego, devoid of clear understanding, who had been the source of affliction to many gods, fickleness approached mounted on an elephant. Just look in your meditations and see how fickleness comes on an elephant. He marches right onto the battlefield and says, let's dig a little well over here. No, that one's no good. Let's dig another one over here. And pretty soon we have many, many shallow wells, and fickleness comes to battle. He attacked the goddess from above with his energy, but the Mother of the Universe, with the shout of her mantra, wounded him, and deprived of light, the energy fell to the earth. Fickleness has no more energy. When he found that his energy was broken, fickleness became intensely angry. Now he threw his pike at her, but the goddess cut it with her arrows. In all of this, the lion of the goddess jumped upon the head of the elephant and began an intensive battle with that thought. Those two fought and fought. The elephant, which is the conveyance of fickleness, and the lion of Dharma, which is the conveyance of the goddess. They're fighting now. Those two fought and fought, and the elephant fell to the ground. Then they rose in excessive rage and began to fight again with fierce blows. Thereafter, with great speed, the lion leaped into the atmosphere, and falling from the sky, severed the head of fickleness from his body. Guess we've got to make a commitment. No more fickleness. You know the big C word? Commitment. Sankalpa. Haughtiness was slain by the goddess with stones and trees in that battlefield, and striking with his paws and biting with his teeth, the lion brought down disbelief. Striking angrily with her club, the goddess reduced arrogance to powder. Memories was cut by the sword, and anxiety and blindness by her arrows. Violent temper and passion and the great deceiver too were slain by the three-eyed seer of all. Look at all those demons scattered about the battlefield. No more violent tempers. No more haughtiness or arrogance or passion. No great deceptions. We're making a commitment, a sankalpa. Hypocrisy's head was cut by the sword, irresistible temptation and foul mouth. That nasty demon. Foul mouth? Can't we talk sweetly to one another? We're both sent to the kingdom of death by her arrows. Seeing his army thus being destroyed, the great ego assumed the form of a buffalo, and he himself began to terrify the troops of the goddess. Now you look at the landscape of India, you'll find on every national highway the tankers have the middle of the road. And then come the Tata trucks. And then the ambassadors. And after that, the Marutis. And then the cyclewalas and the rickshaws and the bicycles. But everyone moves over for the buffalo. The buffalo stands in the middle of the highway. And everyone moves out of his way. The most stubborn beast in the entire landscape of India is the buffalo. And here, the great ego is assuming the form of a buffalo. And he began to terrify the troops of the goddess. The most stubborn beast, this great ego, Mahan Isha Asura, the great ruler of duality. Mohish is a buffalo. Mohishasura, the great stubborn beast. Us. Sometimes he fought with his snout, sometimes kicking with his hooves into the air, sometimes hitting with his tail, sometimes whirling around while ripping with his horns with great speed and a great war cry, his breath puffing in exertion. He scattered the troops over the ground. Having laid low the troops of her army, that fought advanced to kill the lion of the goddess. Then the mother of the universe became very angry. Attacking Dharma? Kishosh, you've got a lot of nerve. That great evil one, the great ego, also became very angry. He kicked the earth with his hooves and raised large mountains with his horns and threw them aside as he roared. With the great speed of this thought, the earth split in fear. His tail lashed the sea of desire, causing the waters to flood the earth. Everywhere we looked, there was a flood of desire, and everyone who did anything did it for me. They all said, "I am the door." Tossing about his horns, he dashed and split the clouds to pieces, and cast up by the violent speed of his breath winds, mountains fell from the sky. And waging battle in this great anger, that great thought advanced towards her, while she who tears apart thought assumed anger and prepared to slay him. Throwing her net, she bound that great thought. After being bound in that great encounter, he left his form as a buffalo. He's not giving up. Thereafter, he manifested in the form of a lion. In this condition, the mother of the universe was prepared to cut off his head, but somehow he changed his form again to that of a man bearing a sword. See how devious this ego is. He's constantly changing his form. Sometimes he's a buffalo, sometimes he's a lion, sometimes he's a man with a sword. Then the goddess instantly rained upon him a shower of arrows, and with sword and shield she was ready to pierce him. Just then he took the form of the king of elephants. With his trunk, he began to pull the huge lion of the goddess and to roar, but as he was pulling, she cut the trunk with her sword. Then that great thought again wore the body of a buffalo, and in this manner as before, with the inhalation and exhalation of his breath, he shook the three worlds with all that moves and moves not. In great rage, the mother of the perceivable world, she who tears apart thought, again and again drank an excellent spirit, the spirit of pure devotion, and with red eyes began to laugh. There, in the strength and boldness of that wild ecstasy, that evil demon roared, and with his horns he threw mountains at she who tears apart thought. She began to pulverize those mountains with her arrows of speech. Speaking in the ecstasy of spirit, her mouth became red and her tongue was stuttering. The goddess said, "Roar and roar, you fool, for so long as I drink this spirit, roar as much as you like. Your death is in my hands, and when I have finished drinking, soon the gods will be roaring. I'm drinking the nectar of devotion. Ego, you make as much noise as you want. When I am filled with devotion, I will take the energy away from the ego and I will give it to the gods and let them roar the praise of divinity." Maharishi said, thus speaking, the goddess leaped and ascended above that great thought. Pressing down upon him and holding him with her foot, she struck him in the throat with her pike. The great ego again, hit by the foot of the goddess, changed his form from his mouth, but was able to free only half of his body, and with her great strength, the goddess restrained that as well. Even with the half of his body coming out, the great thought waged battle with the goddess. Then the goddess cut off his head with a great double-edged sword. Shrieking and crying, the remaining thoughts of that army ran away, and all the gods became exceedingly joyous. In great great satisfaction the gods joined the great singer, seers in hymns of praise to the goddess, while the celestial chorus and nymphs danced and sang with joy. Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well. Do we have any questions in chapter 3, Boo?
In many of the chapters, the horses and the charioteers get wasted too. What do they represent?
Oh, the army of thoughts that come with their commanders are manifestations of the strength of that individual commander. So when memories comes with 6 million chariots and horses racing about, you don't just have one memory. You got 6 million of them to fight with.
But like horses, do they represent obstinacy or something?
Obstinacy and speed and strength.
And the charioteers?
There are four divisions in the army. There's the elephants and the horses and the chariots and the foot soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And this is the Chaturangsena. The four divisions of the army, and so when they come to attack, it's not just one foot soldier fighting with a sword. It's waves of elephants and horses and chariots and soldiers all armed and fighting with us with the greatest of intensity. And that's why they come with armies. Doctor.
The sea of desire.
Yes.
And, you know, the way it is, because it's my desire and it's my thought, made me think of Rene Descartes and wondering whether he was the spokesman of Mahishasura.
Possibly. Cogito ergo sum.
Exactly.
Hmm. Yes, very much so. But remember, as we take our course through Indian philosophy in the classical schools, the first of the school is Charvaka. Charvaka says everything that was in your mind was once in your senses. The only thing you really know is what you've seen. You must have empirical verification to realize any truth. And then comes Nyaya. He says, no, we make references, we make inferences, we make deductions, we use logic, we think about what we see. Empirical reasoning is not the only source of knowledge. We have 5 means of proof. And I'm not going to take you into epistemology tonight. And then comes Nyaya Boisheshik. And then comes Shankhya and Yoga. And Purva Mimamsa and Uttar Mimamsa. We move from the grossest materialism to the highest idealism. From material philosophy that says you only know through your senses to pure idealism which says there is only one Brahman. Oh, here we have the entire course, the entire journey is encapsulated in the Chandi. The ego is expressing I. And when the ego dies, the gods join all the rishis and munis, and they sing and dance with joy.
Western culture headed more into materialism with Cartesian philosophy.
Certainly.
Which would seem to indicate that was probably the heyday of the great ego.
Well, the manifestation of it is
right.
Continuing today. However, on the other side, we had Emerson, Locke, Rousseau, Thoreau. Thank you for your thoroughness.
Swami?
Yes, please.
Is there any significance that he hit her left arm as opposed to her right arm or any old arm?
Or any old arm. Of course, she had 1,000, remember?
I'm just curious why the text was so specific.
Uh-huh. Well, the left arm generally, the whole left side stands for devotion, and the whole right side stands for knowledge. Mm-hmm. Wisdom and devotion are the two sides. Mother has two breasts. She feeds her children with wisdom on the right side and devotion on the left side. Here she's striking the left side. It's the side that's connected to the heart. He's going after the good stuff. Moving after devotion. Yes, please.
That was
devoid of clear understanding who struck her, and he just made her doubt. He put a veil of doubts over her so that the seekers would see only doubts, only confusion. They had no clarity, so they couldn't have conviction in what they were doing. They were without commitment. Without full faith, they weren't 100%. And if you're not 100%, you can't pay attention 100%. You can't give the best until you're committed. And that's why so often we find failure, is because we really haven't made the commitment. And when we do make the commitment, we can pay attention 100%. And then there's perfect efficiency. And that's what's called sadhu. Sadhu means someone who's efficient. Someone who pays full and complete perfect attention. Yes, please, Nitya.
Swamiji, verse 12. The mother of the universe deprives fickleness of his light and energy falls to earth with the mantra hum. And that mantra is in, of course, many different places in the Chandi. Can you tell us more about this mantra?
Yes, hum is astra mantra. It is the weapon. It is the weapon of purity, the weapon of virtue. It cuts away all the duality. You'll find also in chapter 6, the seed of desire, Rock the Beach. I'm sorry, not Rock the Beach. Chapter 6 is, excuse me, all else fails. Sinful Eyes. Sinful Eyes comes in chapter 6, and he is also destroyed by the mantra hum. Tumraloch. This astra mantra, it's a weapon. And with this weapon, she is purifying all the duality. If we were to dissect the mantra, we would find that ha means Ishwar, consciousness, Rudra, Shiva. And U means circumstance. And Anuswar means the sound of an atom, the perfect consciousness in all existence, in all circumstance. Hum. This remembrance is the astra. This is the weapon. Any other questions in chapter 3?
Swamiji, when the ego is changing forms, I understand that part of the meaning there is that our
Bible? Is there a symbology to that? Like, are they specifically kind of, you know, do they mean something when the lion and the elephant fight in a certain way, or, you know, when it falls on the elephant's head?
Yes, the entire thing is a tremendous battle between Dharma and Adharma. And Adharma comes in many forms, and it keeps changing that form. Where Dharma is consistent, Dharma is the lion, his courageous fortitude, it's just proceeding to manifest the highest ideal of perfection in every circumstance, whereas the ego is riding on a conveyance, which is changing form. He himself is changing form. He's coming in a multitude of various forms, and the battle goes on, and he doesn't want to give up. He, even half of his form is restrained. He'll fight until the end. So here we've got a tremendous depiction of how devious the ego is and how often and frequently he changes the form. And he comes with armies, with so many soldiers, horses, chariots, elephants, and foot soldiers. And they're all other objects of consideration for consciousness. Every time any soldier comes onto the battlefield, we must pay attention to him.
Distractions.
These are all the distractions. Try and sit with your mind at peace and see how many are the soldiers in the army of the great ego. If you count them all, you'll never fall into meditation. How many distractions there are coming and poking us with their arrows and their swords and their spears. Don't sit there. This was written thousands of years ago. It has nothing to do with your life. This is old mythology. What are you doing worshiping those clay statues? How can you waste your life on a mountaintop surrounded by objects of art? Go out in the world and become a somebody. Worship the ego. You'll be important. You'll have status in the eyes of the community. How many are the soldiers in the army of the great ego poking us, pushing us, shooting at us? Time and time again, with your foul mouth and your irresistible temptations and your violent temper and the hypocrisy of it all. The great frustration, all those memories. Will we ever get to meditate? Yes. Yes, it does say that. And it defines grace as kripa. And kri means do, and pa means get. And the grace is you will get what you do. Or you'll get the fruit of your karma.
But in meditation, it's not you that does it.
That's right, but you have to take the affirmative action of putting yourself in the position. Well, ultimately, it's all her. But in the lower levels, when it's us in duality, there is a duality, and it's us against them. Sorry about it. It is us against them. And all those soldiers that are running around poking us, we have to say, okay, guys, be thou gone. I don't want to fight this battle anymore. You're too strong for me. You won the boon that only she would be able to slay you. Mother, give me a break. Take the energy away from the thoughts and let the gods go back to heaven. That's the prayer. We know you alone are the sole reality. You are the only existence. You are the energy of all in everything from Brahma to a blade of grass. Take the energy away from the thoughts and let the gods remember their divinity. One prayer. Don't give me stuff. Don't make me famous. Don't give me this or that or the... I only have one prayer. Take the energy away from the thoughts and let me remember you. You are my divinity. You are my divine nature. And remember in chapter 13 when she finally comes to samadhi and she says, Ya pratate tva ya bhupa, what do you want? And samadhi is already there. It's just seeing her. And ultimately, he just wants to see her. And that's how he becomes samadhi. Because he didn't want anything else. Good thoughts wanted his kingdom back. And she gave it to him. But samadhi, he was already there. He just wanted the wisdom that removes the attachments of egotism and possession. In other words, to stay in samadhi. And she said, Tathastu, you'll stay in samadhi. And your name and your karma will be the same. Any other questions, please?
In this chapter, the ego has taken different shapes, elephants, buffalo, and all that. And now it was dharma. How an ego can take the shape of dharma, becoming loyal?
The ego takes the shape, so many shapes. Many times the ego says, look how right I am. I'm doing righteous behavior. This is dharmic behavior. Where it's really only enhancing the ego. The ego makes a pretense of being dharmic as well. Many are the spiritual materialists who are trying to acquire spirituality as though it were a commodity which could be purchased in the marketplace. Or many people would like to have spiritual experiences so that they could tell others and become more important in the eyes of the society. I remember in the life stories of Ramakrishna, Hriday always asked Ramakrishna, why don't you talk to Mahakali and ask Mother Kali, give you money and we could build schools and hospitals and clinics and we could do so much for the poor. Keshav Sen also said the same thing. Thakur, raise money for us. We'll do so much good work. Remember Ramakrishna went to Kali and he looked at her and looked at her and finally he said, Mother, Hriday says I should ask you for some money. And suddenly he had a vision of a beautiful woman covered with filth. Just covered from head to toe with filth. And he went into samadhi. And realized he didn't need the money. This is another expression of the ego. I will be the benefactor to many. Ramakrishna said, if you get the vision of the Divine Mother, don't waste your time asking for things of the world. Ask to be with her only. If you get that privilege to see her, don't waste your wish asking for things of the world. Just ask to see her more frequently. More and more and more. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Next time, all of us gods and goddesses who have no more egos left are going to sing a song, just praising her. Because what happens when you don't have an ego? What would you do with your life? Probably just sing. Jai Ma.